And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they were moving it to Rosario. Yeah.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affle drives forward. Affle scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast brought to you by our good friends at Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. www.oldnortharcade. Hit it up. We got a little midweek Massive Report for you. We were off Monday in observance of Memorial Day, but we're back here recording on Wednesday, and we've got a lot to talk about. A little bit of happenings over the past couple of days that we wouldn't have otherwise gotten to. We'll be talking with myself, Bart. I like to talk to myself a lot. We've also got Ralph Schudel with us. Ralph, how you doing, sir?
I'm just getting real hyped for the Saprissa International Friendly.
Oh, it is on. This is what I've been waiting for. This is why I got into soccer for years and years and years, for the chance to see a Costa Rican Premier League team here at our home ground. It is thrilling, and we will definitely be getting to that. We've also got Sam Fahmy with us. Sam, how you doing, sir?
What is the Saprissa thing you're talking about? I thought we were playing the University of Stanford, right? Did
I
miss something?
Jordan, I thought we were playing the University of Stanford. Testimonial match.
Okay.
Honest God, when I saw Saprissa, it's like, I thought, is that some sort of like smoked meat or something? It sounds like...
smoked meat.
Like a jerky of some sort attached cheese to it.
Or it's like a Serrano ham. It's like, here's a Saprissa ham. It's delicious. Very thin cut, great. I don't know. And apparently it's I'm assume they're, better than a marginal Costa Rican team. I have not the slightest clue. So between then and now, I'm going to look up and try to have at least cursory knowledge of them. But we got.
I'll give you the one point. They've won more league titles in Costa Rica than any other team at 34, I believe. So there it is.
That is correct.
We've played them in Champions League before.
I heard too from my sources today that Jairo Arrieta tried out for them and was offside the entire time.
Yeah, it's like that sounds about right. Oh, Jairo, I miss him. I mean, not at all. Not even in the least bit. But kind of.
Jairo was a snappy dresser.
He was a snappy dresser, and he was a super nice guy. Yeah. He was just always offside.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we got. We're gonna kick things off, if you will, with the game last weekend in Kansas City. A scoreless draw against SKC. You'd think some of the news, the most notable things might be, Zach Steffen with another clean sheet. Columbus catching a point to find themselves now tied for the supporter shield race. But really, I think what stole the show and stole the night was the refereeing and the work of MLS's Minority Report machine, video-assisted replay. Ralph, why don't you let us know what happened, what to take away from that SKC match?
Yeah, a rare national team appearance for Columbus Crew SC because, so many of those happen. Anyway, it was an interesting night in Kansas City. You had the Class of the West up against Columbus Crew, obviously, who are sitting in the top half of the Eastern Conference. Peter Vermees versus Greg Berhalter. Everything on paper said that this should be a great match. Columbus starts out in the 24th minute as Christian Martinez goes down the right-hand side, plays a great ball into Giassi Zardes, who is onside perfectly. I mean, this was a great weighted through ball, through the air rather, a direct play. Melia gets a right hand on it, makes a great save on the ball. 39th minute, our first questionable call there of the match happens as Pipa plays a ball into Zardes over his head. Zardes wins the foot race there, but has Aiko Parra and Graham Zusi on his shoulder. It is a no call as Zardes goes down into the penalty box. I thought initially at the time during the game, I thought it was a clean tackle. But up until doing show prep and looking, I actually saw Graham Zusi's shoulder, or his hand on Giassi Zardes' shoulder as Zardes started losing his balance. So I could see an argument going towards Columbus Crew SC in the case of a first penalty. Again, just about 2 minutes later, Zardes is awarded a PK in the 41st minute. Zardes, unfortunately, takes too much of a stutter step and opens his hips up a little too much. Melia reads it brilliantly for the save, gets a ton of momentum going for SKC. Just a few moments after that, Federico Higuain takes a touch towards the center of the box, loses possession, and gives it up to Roger Espinoza, in which he tackles Espinoza, going in studs up on Espinoza. Espinoza does a brilliant job of selling it. Play, you know, looks that he's in tremendous discomfort. It goes to VAR. Head official Robert Zavinga, I can't say his last name correctly, goes to VAR, and they deem it a red card, a straight red card offense. A lot of folks had a lot of questions about that. I know this set Crew SC Twitter ablaze, especially amongst the media and spectators, with the grand debate. I'm sure we'll talk about that here in just a few moments. And then following that up in the second half, Zach Steffen has done what he's so brilliantly done for the past couple of weeks, maintains the record Crew SC shutout streak as he has a brilliant stop on Curry Shelton. Also, too, was able to hold off the flurry of Sporting Kansas City attempts as Crew SC were down to 10 men. Also, too, of note, Gaston Saar returning back from what some deemed as a career-ending injury for him, had about a 50% chance of returning and ever playing soccer again, so great to see the big guy back on the pitch there. And then another controversial moment is we had just a little bit after that Shelton incident was that Christian Martinez was matched up with Seth Sinkovic on the right-hand side and threw a slap his way. Looked like an open-hand slap. Sinkovic goes down. There was no punishment at the time for the call, and a lot of folks took kind of offense to that Higuain's challenge was immediately a red card, and that, you know, Crew SC fans were even talking that, you know, if anybody deserved a red card, it was going to be Christian Martinez. So Crew SC preserves the 0-0 draw, now remain unbeaten, I believe, in six straight, and the shutout record continues on as Crew SC now has the stingiest defense in franchise history.
On a scale of, you know, old-timey British aristocracy and Dave Chappelle playing Rick James, just how hard of a slap was that from Christian Martinez? I was listening to the game on radio.
It was pretty bad. Like, yeah, it was pretty bad and obvious and not even well aimed. That's the downside. It's like, if you're going to slap somebody to the point where if you get caught, it's a red card, at least do it, you know, get your slaps worth. This was stupid. In as stupid as the word stupid would mean. Unnecessary. It didn't look like it was provoked. It didn't look like it was, I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking, but unfortunately, that's one of the things that I think, as we see him mature as a player in his skills, in that cross to Zardes that was perfect. As much as his temper is an issue, and it's going to get him red carded. It's going to get him red carded. Obviously, it didn't get him red carded in this situation, which was crazy considering Pippa's red card. But on the other hand, he did get the suspension after all, which, to a certain degree, I don't think is a bad thing.
So, real quick note on that, too, just to put it in context for folks, if you're a fan of How I Met Your Mother, it was nowhere close to the slap-iversary between Barney and I can't think of Jason Segel's character off the top of my head, but it was somewhere in between the Rick James slapping Charlie Murphy playfully and somewhere between How I Met Your Mother. But a note, for those of you, I actually got an email from the North American Soccer Reporters where they were talking about the MLS pool reporting structure and how pro pro referees were kind of declining to talk about the Christian Martinez situation between head official Robert Zabiga, who did not answer questions from a poll reporter about VAR. And technically, by the league's standing here, as it's been saying, it has been stated, and this is a quote from the email, it's been stated to me and other folks at one time or another that VAR sanctions are in place for certain questions. So reporters can't ask necessarily why wasn't a play reviewed. There are just certain things that Pro actually does not have to comment on in regards to the VAR conversation necessarily. So it's just very interesting that Zabiga wasn't very forthcoming as to the Higuain challenge and why Martinez wasn't issued any type of reprimand.
What I found interesting in listening in Neil Sika, it sounded like he was doing, I think because, as you alluded to, Ralph, this was one of two national broadcasts that the crew are currently scheduled to have. And because of that, Neil Sika was actually calling the game for radio. Usually they just simulcast the television call on the radio, which is absolutely worthless to listen to.
That's a terrible idea. Whoever thought of that? That was a terrible idea.
I have a feeling we all know who thought of that, and we all know why, because it saves some money. But Sika commented that Zabiga was right there observing that play. Obviously allowed play to go on in part, I think, because SKC had retained possession and had advantage, but didn't seem to make any other indication that he was going to call a foul in the first place. And I know that, you know, when you go in for a tackle the way I've seen the replay, the way that Frederico Higuain did, you probably shouldn't be too surprised to have that, you know, to maybe get that result. But as others have commented, when you look at the angle, his studs didn't go directly into him. The intent, you know, who's to say? But it does sound like a pretty questionable case of VAR. Especially if the referee isn't going to make the call in the first, you know, it's one thing if he'd called a foul and later they come back and say, you know what, that's actually a red card offense, or if they'd given him a yellow and said, no, that's a red card offense. But to, you know, what's it saying when you're just taking away any sort of kind of autonomy for referees in that case to call the game as they see it? Why even bother?
I can't think of the reason why, but a Twitter user, and I think actually Mohamed Saeed, former Crew SC midfielder, retweeted this on Sunday saying that there's a reason that the English Premier League doesn't go with VAR. And, you know, there was, going back to the initial challenge, I think as I saw it and I watched multiple replays about it, there are a couple schools of thought here. Number one, he did go in kind of reckless, and I know a lot of folks out there are probably going to disagree with me, and that's fine. I understand. That's what happens. Everybody's got an opinion about this situation. He hit Espinoza roughly about high ankle, almost on the bone. So I understand that that does hurt. That gets it. I really don't like the fact that the referee didn't have a talk with him at first, especially with being straight, almost like you said, Bart, right in the middle of the play. And I think the second portion of this is Espinoza did a wonderful job of selling the foul. If you look at the replay, Espinoza was down in pain, hammering on the ground, you know, just kind of wallowing in there, and just definitely did a nice job. I think of a little bit of gamesmanship. I understand if a yellow card would have been issued or if a talking to, but to watch the way Higuain's top of his foot interacts with Espinoza when he goes through the tackle, I get the argument for a red card, but, you know, it's just, I think it's a yellow, maybe at max, but, you know, a lot of folks out there, too, were pointing to the New England challenge from Salcido on Harrison Offal a couple weeks ago, saying, you know, that wasn't even carded, and, you know, you need to have consistency in officiating, especially through Major League Soccer, and it's tough to get that because, you know, some of these pro referees are new, some are older, it's just, some guys have a taste of what they're going to let go through the game, and this is a discussion for probably a whole different show you know, about how center officials should behave. I have a philosophy about that. But, you know, the thing is, you shouldn't let a game get that out of control necessarily. And you need to ref with a little bit more consistency.
You can't expect a consistency from referees from game to game when they can't even have consistency from one half to the other. So that's the number one problem. I think while the law is clear about showing studs and going in, this was a 50-50 ball. And with it being a 50-50 ball, it wasn't the intention to go and take the ball out of the other player's feet. The intention was to get to the ball, period. Having said that, the contention that I believe that the crew is appealing this red card and suspension is because the referee didn't even initially call a foul. And he did not go to VAR until after the play had stopped because what's his name was down? Anyway.
Roger Espinosa.
Espinosa, yes. Which if you know anything about me, and you'd know that I dislike Roger Espinosa with the passion of a thousand suns.
Even though he's a former Buckeye?
Even though he's a former Buckeye. I believe he's a total dick. He has always been a dick in Columbus. He's always gone in hard and caused injury to players, especially on the crew. So it's like, yeah, I have no interest in that guy whatsoever. Even if he was on the crew as a player, I would have a hard time, like, I don't know. He's just one of those players. But regardless, so you have that. But, you know, the referee was not consistent at all in this whole game. And going to VAR, you know.
Did he die?
I think Sam. Who did? I think Roger Espinosa got you.
Roger Espinosa got you. He DDoSed you, man.
Oh, because you guys are still active on here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're back now, I think.
Okay. That,
go ahead and
that
finish
was
that
weird.
Thought.
So
there you go. Clap.
I was going to say,
edit that out.
Which spot did I stop at?
Roger Espinosa wasn't a nice guy. He didn't buy you a nice birthday present, you know.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, but the referee was not consistent throughout the whole game, like, at all. And even when he went to VAR, you'd think, you know, how much of the blame falls in the VAR ref a couple of times in which this referee went to VAR that he didn't see it or didn't call it. And good Lord, the Christian Martinez slap was so obvious. It's like, how did he not get a red card or a yellow or a reprimand or anything? So the whole thing was out of hand, and that's completely stupid. And yes, I would like to hear from Howard Webb personally. I don't even want to hear from the other referees. I just want to hear from Howard Webb personally of why this is a load of crap.
I think, Sam, that you got on an interesting point here, and we don't necessarily have to dwell on VAR this entire time, but that it does. Where it's one thing to have this again, Minority Report machine that can, you know, ostensibly is here to help assist referees, but I think we're letting it become, or they're letting it become, in a way, to shirk accountability. And is there any sort of differing degree accountability that these referees from pro are being held to with VAR in place? Because if you are missing that call, you shouldn't be bailed out. If you're a referee and you miss a call, especially in the case there with Sabingo, where you are right in front of it and it's later, you don't even call a foul. And VAR has to come in and overturn your non-call to award a red. You know, what is the, you're not controlling the game. You're not calling the game well. And there, it seems, I'd want to see a ref or something fined for that. If we're going to fine players or teams for these fouls or for a red card offense or suspend them, if you've got a referee that isn't doing their job and you're saying that's the case because he's not calling a foul and you're going back after the fact and awarding a red, or he completely misses the Christian Martinez, that's absolutely zero accountability there on the referee. It's just, I can call it, do whatever I want, because VAR is going to, you know, cover my ass if I need it.
Do you guys think, and Bart, that transitions wonderfully, and that was going to be the question I ask, do these referees lean on VAR too much as a crutch?
I think it seems very apparent that that's the case.
I don't know if that's really... I don't know if they lean on VAR as a crutch. This is probably the most egregious I've seen it, in which a referee didn't even call a foul, and then at the next play of stoppage, he goes back to review a play and then gives a decision based on that.
You didn't watch the Euro 2016 final then, did you?
I did not.
That was
or
that
if
was,
I did, I can't remember that far back.
That
I'm
was
too
a
old.
Gross. That was a gross VAR.
Yeah.
Game.
So I mean, should the referee lean on it? No, but man, this we're talking about a guy sitting in a booth watching 17 angles on TV, and they still can't get it right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at this point, I'll just take the human error of the guy in the middle. And be like, all right, whatever. But that's just me.
And that's fine. And I understand that. And that's the point of frustration is if you have this technology in there, I think it was the LA game. What, we had, mm-hmm. what, three VARs in like 20 minutes last year? Is that,
yep.
somebody stopped me?
Two kills the game.
And see,
yeah,
two goals
taken away.
That kills it. And then you start getting this added time in there where it's like a hydration break where you've got 6 or 7 minutes of added time in there because – it just completely kills the momentum of the game. I'm with you guys. I like the human error of it, but or the human error of just the center official and no VAR. I think it convolutes the game, and I'm going to sound like one of those traditionalists, but it really slows down the process of a game that, you know, considering to the casual fan, it's not going to be appealing to the casual fan because people think soccer is long enough as it is already.
Exactly. It shouldn't be a debatable, like, it shouldn't be a back and forth debate either. The VAR ref calls it, or the VAR says, this is my call, look at the monitor, check it. And it should be like, you know, in college football, they bring out the little tiny monitor with the hood, and the referee looks in it and then makes the decision. It shouldn't be like that. He has to go to the other side of the field at the center line on the other side of the from the where the benches are in order to look at the screen. And I mean, I don't know. It is kind of a waste of time.
For the fact that this league, you know, won't adopt goal line technology, and yet where that's something that, you know, the eye might or might not, it's not really up. It takes the sort of judgment call out of it, which you should have. If it's across the line or it's not across the line, that's that. But then to have, you know, this VAR or something that'll slow down games, and you know, for what it's worth, it looked like that Federico Higuain, you know, that play probably shouldn't have even happened in the first place. I think that was in something like the 6th minute of stoppage time in the first half when that finally occurred. It's a frustrating result for Columbus. And obviously an area that MLS still needs to get their act together in, but what else is new?
Well, and one more thing, too, is, and this is a sports-wide, insert whatever sport you want in this. I think it's ridiculous that, you know, referees are slowing things down frame by frame because even you look at it in the NBA, you look at it in the NFL, as Sam alluded to with college football, the human eye can't see things frame by frame. You've got to have a little bit of some error in there because it loses its kind of touch, I guess, rather, you know, and it's just, it's kind of, the human eye can't see that. So it's just trust the referee, empower the referee to make the decision and just stick with it.
Well, and anything in slow motion can look terrible and it looks thought out and deliberate, but when you're watching something in real time, you can recognize, like, they're not making decisions that, you know, quickly and that much. It's happening in a split second, and, you know, to the extent that you can get it to get something right or supplement, I'm not necessarily against VAR, but it just, they need to find a way to find that middle ground, and it is not been found yet. When you look at some of the other developments in that game, though, I do want to have just a bring us back to that, the penalty from Giassi Zardes, the miss. Obviously, I suspect the logic there from Federico Higuain was, well, this is a penalty that Giassi has earned. And that he's going to give him that opportunity. And, of course, Giassi coming into the weekend was tied, still remains tied for the Golden Boot with 8 on the season. That would have been a way for him to go up in that race. So maybe that's what Frederico Higuain is thinking. But I'm just wondering, I want to get your guys' thoughts. I know that Greg Berhalter has provided players with a degree of autonomy. He kind of has his handful of guys that he wants taking penalties, but he sort of allows the players out there to, you know, make a case-by-case decision and who's going to take a given penalty. So we've seen, you know, earlier in the year, Frederico Higuain typically the guy to take him, but he allows Jassy Zardes to take that penalty to win the game against Montreal at the South End. Of course, we all know about Frederico's history there at the South End and difficulties, but then we've seen him score another penalty there at the South End later. And I'm just wondering, do you think that, you know, maybe with penalties, if we can, you know, even going back to without dwelling on the Kai Kamara incident, but do you wonder if that's maybe a degree of autonomy that Greg Berhalter maybe shouldn't be providing? He should maybe, I think there's an argument that he should pick a guy and he sticks with him, and that's the guy that everyone else on the field knows is taking the penalty every single time, whether that's Frederico Higuain, whether that's Jassy Zardes, but removes any room for debate and takes that choice out of the player's hands. And then, you know, ultimately then Greg Berhalter can be held more accountable for that, but he can also say, look, if Pipa's, you know, missing him a lot, I can give somebody else the juice. It doesn't need to be him.
I think this is a controversy that doesn't need to be made into a controversy, but the belief is probably that Higuain and Zardes are 1 and 2, okay? And having said that, like, we didn't see them argue. Pippa didn't even approach the ball at all. So maybe he had already told Zardes that he should take, you know, or pointed at him and told him to take the penalty kick. But, like, it wasn't like they both stood over the ball, or Higuain went to the ball and Zardes was like, no, I'm going to take it, or anything like that. It seems that if Higuain didn't approach the ball, Zardes assumed that it was his, and he just took it. His form was just bad.
Yeah, he got too square to the ball, obviously tipped off Melia, and Melia's one of his keepers that's quickly approaching Nick Raimondo standards, in which it's becoming increasingly more difficult to score a penalty kick on him in Major League Soccer. But I kind of wish Pat was here today to kind of fact check this, but I believe after the Kai situation, it was made Berhalter, especially as part of this leadership committee, was that they've established a certain rundown, like a pecking order of penalty kick takers, and usually he is not one to assign them. But I agree with you, Bart. I would like to see maybe, I'm not saying that Higuain would have provided the answer against Melia, but, you know, Higuain's a little bit more tricky. You know, he's a trickster. He's a little more sly with some of those moves. We've certainly seen him do a Panenka on Alex Bono, which is not an easy feat for anybody to accomplish. But, you know, it's, you've got to have somebody out there with a little bit more confidence there. And it's just, Jassy, albeit he's the Golden Boot leader right now, it just, he didn't look ready for that moment.
It's certainly interesting, and one thing to maybe dwell on, the return to, and hopefully it won't remain an issue for the remainder of the season. That was just, again, the first penalty that Columbus has missed this year. With that save on the penalty, that appeared to be the push when it came to it, to when it comes down to players of the week or starting 11 of the week for MLS. So Timiella got second team, I believe. First team was going, or the bench there for goalkeeper of the week. First team, I believe, went to Dallas, but you did have a couple of crew players. Artur, who had a strong performance there at the center of the midfield, the sort of performance we've been looking for him for a while. And then obviously the other being Josh Williams getting in there as Jonathan Mensah was out of the game with a little bit of an injury. But let's talk a little bit about those performances, and then we will sit back and kind of appreciate a little bit the brilliance that has been Zach Steffen this month.
Yeah, no doubt. Zach has been good, and he made a couple of saves to earn that clean sheet today, or Sunday that were of you know, the kind that gets you a national team call up the following few days. So there's that. But you know, Tim Melia also, man, you got to give it to MLS. If they have nothing else, they are producing some very, very solid goalkeeping. And I don't know if it's because the goalkeepers are getting better or is because the league sucks that bad that they can't score.
The league sucks that bad.
On people. I was honestly, I love Josh Williams, but I was surprised that he was on Team of the Week and not Lalas Abubakar, because I think Lalas had some very, very critical saves at very critical moments where he stuck his foot out and deflected a ball that could have been on its way to Zach Steffen. But that's just me. Artur had a pretty decent game too. He had a nice shot that got close, but man, if he can consistently keep that trajectory just down by maybe a yard, he could probably score like 6 or 7 goals.
I agree with you, Sam, about Abubakar. I thought Josh didn't really do much for me this week. I saw him kind of do a couple of weird fouls in a couple strange areas. I think he fouled Salawi a couple times on the left side. You know, he had a quiet game. I think Abubakar was quietly underrated this game. I thought, like you said, he stepped to the ball very well, had a couple of really clutch tackles. And you know, this young man's confidence continues to grow, which is really exciting to see out of Lalas. And you have to wonder, I think if Ghana's not in the World Cup this year, right? But I think, you know, if Ghana was...
Yeah, they were bounced by Egypt. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You know, I think if Ghana was in the World Cup, you know, it's not out of the possibility. I think that maybe Lalas potentially gets a look. I'm not saying he makes the team, but at least maybe a provisional roster spot or something of that sort. And then the youngster Artur, as we keep talking, I mean, I got to keep pinching myself thinking that this kid just turned, I think, 21 not too long ago. And, you know, he's playing wise beyond his years. And like Sam's saying, if he kind of gets the laces through it and kind of keeps that trajectory down, I mean, this kid's going to be bombing midfield shots from outside of the 18 at Mafre, and the crowd's going to be going crazy for several years to come.
Saying that they're still here.
Yeah, at Mafre Stadium, because we'll have a great new downtown stadium in a couple of years. But you look at, I think it's, you know, maybe somewhat notable, you know, back on Zach Steffen, this young man who did not give up a single goal in the month of May, has not made it to MLS Team of the Week for any single one of those weeks in spite of that. Although I suspect when we do get our Team of the Month or perhaps Player of the Month, he best be capturing that. But, it, you know, along the way, he's captured a Columbus Crew franchise record and helped lead the team to that with all those, I don't even know how many minutes it is now between giving up a goal. And I just, you know, we've been talking about a little bit over the past couple weeks, but just any other observations on the way this team has morphed, especially in a game like last Sunday when you're playing the entire half down a man, the way that they've been able to grind out wins and really, I mean, kind of smother and limit any, you know, potential. I think SKC had a couple decent chances within the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half. And then it was pretty much just throwing a wet blanket on the fire. Nothing there for the Wizards. And you know, I like that they've been making it relatively easy for Zach Steffen to keep those sheets oh so clean.
Yeah, his dry cleaning bill's down. I talked to him today in training, and his dry cleaning bill's down. He said he's not paying anything because he's got clean sheets. Get it? No? Okay.
We're gonna have to edit that in post.
You know, seriously, I think, and guys, I mean, you're free to disagree with me, but I think this team plays better with 10 men. It's really weird at times because it's
I disagree.
Like, well, okay, but
I'm gonna. If it wasn't, if we weren't on like a, I would have thrown something at you.
Yeah, but no, here's the thing. I mean, before, and I can think of 2016 in particular. You know, it's a death sentence for this team if they went down a man. But you know, they get down to 10, and no goals have been scored. Crew SC has walked away with points each time that they've gone down a man, and that is showing tremendous growth and kind of maturity, I think, on the behalf of Greg Berhalter and a lot of the players that are on this team right now, because it just shows how he can adjust, get the right players into the right situations. And like we talked about several, maybe even years ago, Berhalter would be reluctant to change and just keep slamming the same system down your throat. But now he's going through making adjustments. You see Alex Granali come in, you see Gaston Sarro come in, and he starts plugging in the right people, and it works, and Caressi gets points. And these points early in the season could be the difference between finishing second and finishing sixth.
You really started seeing the maturation of Greg Berhalter as a coach last year, when towards like the middle, after that losing slump that almost got us below the playoff line, and he started making these adjustments and these changes, and all of a sudden you're getting players like, you know, Abubakar that are stepping up. You get players like Mensah that started scoring goals, and looked more confident. You got a lot of changes because he kind of changed the approach and the philosophy just a little bit to kind of match what he has, but also change the approach and the philosophy of how he plays other teams. We've seen more tinkering, not tinkering maybe, but like how he plugs in certain players in certain situations, and that has paid off very well for him, and it will continue to pay off. But also, as you see him mature in the ranks of MLS, you also see him mature, not mature, but grow up on the list of possible U.S. national team coaches. Take that as it may be, but what he is doing this year right now with this team, and I think that highly contributes to Zach Steffen's clean sheet factor, is that this team is playing with more confidence in the back than they ever have since Berhalter took over. And I hope I'm knocking on wood, so I hope I'm not jinxing that, but that's how I see it right now, and that contributes to you know, it's like the snowball effect. You continue to get that confidence the more you have, you know, clean sheet minutes. Yeah, you're not focusing on the record, as they're all going to say, but you are looking at those, how can we keep this going? How can we keep this going? How can we keep this going as long as possible before, you know, somehow they're going to concede a goal at some point and they're going to lose a game at some point, and it's not going to be the end of the world.
It certainly will see, and of course, if that streak is going to continue, it'll likely have to be maintained without Zach Steffen there, and Will Trapp, as we can kind of maybe get into that news a little bit more into the preview and what their announcements that they'll be get some international friendly caps with the good old U.S. of A. coming up in these next few games that will have them out of the lineup. Of course, that provides an extra, you know, wrinkle of difficulty, is you're going to have Frederico Higuain at least likely out this next game. I believe that Greg Berhalter did announce that he was going to appeal that red. I don't know if either of you
he did
heard.
File the appeal.
Do we have any idea when we might hear the ruling from? I mean, I know the ruling. It's going to be red card stands, but. Before, do we know when MLS might confirm what we already know?
Let me ask the Master Report researcher real quick. Hold on 1 second.
Oh, you're using the dial-up, not the fax machine?
Yeah, the fax machine's rented out by some other show somewhere.
Regardless, it'll be interesting. And obviously, I think, as you alluded to, Ralph, 2-game suspension handed to Cristiano Martinez. Greg Berhalter breaking that news before MLS could break it themselves. A first, I believe, for Greg Berhalter. Usually likes to keep things a little bit close to the vest. So a difficult, you know, a game that I think you're probably happy to get a point out of against SKC, a game that you probably should have gotten 3 points out of, frankly, with the penalty. But it looks like we do have some breaking news from Ralph Schedell.
Not breaking necessarily, but according to our good friend Andrew Erickson at the Columbus Dispatch, an appeal decision on Higuain is expected in the next 24 hours.
All right, so by the time you listen to this, that'll already be decided.
Yep. And, you know, the 2-game suspension to Christian Martinez, I don't think, is nearly as critical. And actually, even better yet, and look at it, this as the silver lining, maybe. Maybe you get a chance to plug in somebody like Eduardo Sosa, or more than likely the replacement is probably going to be Argudo, mm-hmm. who has shown pretty well and has gotten some playing time and almost kind of had some really nice passes in the last game. So, you know, this could be, for the first time in a while, this team has a decent depth at a very similar level to what the first team is. Just hope and pray that they maintain it and then that they hold on.
Definitely, of course, you know, with and it also may, if we're really looking for silver linings, to prevent Christian Martinez from getting a getting named to the World Cup Panama squad. I'm sure if I was their manager, and I think there's a lot of, I think most of us probably agreed that Christian Martinez was, you know, maybe in consideration, but not really a serious threat to make that Panama final World Cup roster. But after that display in Kansas City, I think you're just showing that, you know, even though the skill might be there, certainly the maturity isn't quite there to represent your team on that World Cup stage. You know how heated those games can get, how tempers can flare, and you certainly, for a team like Panama that's going to have to scrap and scrape their way to getting any positive results in Russia, you can't afford to have a liability or risk like that for Christian Martinez. It's one thing when it's Zinedine Zidane or if it's you know, Luis Suarez biting people, but he's also scoring four goals for you. It's another thing when it's a young player who certainly has lots of talent, but as was clear Sunday, still has a lot of growing up to do as well.
Panama's group, by the way, just for World Cup conversation, is Belgium, Panama, Tunisia? Tunisia, there we go, and England. So I think we know the two teams that are getting out of that group.
Yeah, go Tunisia, baby. Woo! moving on, a little bit of other news around MLS this week. There's a team a little bit down south from here, from Columbus, in a city called Cincinnati, I believe, that was awarded a MLS expansion franchise on Tuesday. Awarded that team, obviously, being FC Cincy, and that team being awarded that event occurring at a local brewer down there, Ryan Geist, which you can get at our friends at Old North Arcade, by the way. But also, given some of MLS Commissioner Don Garber's comments, maybe a little bit disparaging to brewers, specifically a certain brew canine that's located here in Columbus. But I want to get your guys' thoughts on the FC Cincinnati expansion bid. What do you think that means for Cincinnati? What do you think that means about the prospects of keeping hell real? Some of Don Garber's comments down there in the 513.
Well, I think Michael Aris came out nicely with an article in the Dispatch today, not to give him a ton of props because I don't want to seem like a fanboy, but he said, you know, I think the title of his article was Hell is Real, and, you know, don't ask Columbus about that. But, you know, congratulations to FC Cincinnati. I know a lot of the fan base hasn't always agreed with me, which is fine. I get it. I don't agree with myself sometimes either. But FCC, great environment. When I was down there for the Open Cup game, passion, you can feel it in the stands. I remember sitting up there with Patrick Murphy, and, you know, the press box was rocking. The noise was so loud. Everybody was amped and really excited, and you could tell that there was a special electricity in the air for FCC. And then again, for the international friendly, when I was down there for the U.S. Women's National Team, when they were playing New Zealand. So, you know, again, even a game that isn't FC Cincinnati, they still had 27,000 or maybe 30-some thousand there, which, you know, Cincinnati, Queen City, is a soccer city. Good for those guys. I know a lot of really great fans down there that have waited a long time for this. And I know some people out there, especially in the league and in other parts of the country, say that FCC bought their way in. That's fine. It's MLS. That's how things work. But, you know, it's, you know, the fans, that doesn't make the fans any less deserving of it. And I'm sure Sam, especially as the former resident of Cincinnati and seeing how things have gone down in Southwest Ohio, I mean, maybe you could kind of quantify for some of the people out there what it actually means for these guys down there.
Yeah, I've, having lived in Cincinnati for 9 years and gone to college down there, I've got a lot of friends down in Cincinnati still, and a lot of them are pretty passionate and some season ticket holders of FC Cincinnati. And I'm happy for them, to be honest. I have seen at least four franchises go into Cincinnati and fold within less than 3 years just because there was no funding. They've always played in obscure places. It was always like fourth or fifth division. I mean, there was all kinds of weirdness, but you know, the lenders have got a lot of money, and sometimes that's what it takes to kind of start big, I want to say. Having said that, I'm interested to see how they're coming in the league next year. There's no wait time. You know, we're halfway through 2018 and they're going to start in 2019. I'm interested to see how that translates into them being a major league soccer team and how, you know, having to abide, especially for the supporters, having to abide by MLS rules or, you know, having to do things that way, how much that changes the dynamic between the supporters and the front office and you know, a front office that is really putting its weight into things and putting its money where its mouth is, which, you know, we kind of used to have, but apparently that front office ran out of money that it might have not had to start with. But having said that, congrats, Cincinnati. I'm really happy for you. I really, really hope. I had a couple of friends post on my Facebook yesterday that they really hope that the rivalry actually takes place. And I really hope it does. So if the crew leave, nothing against you, but I won't be supporting MLS altogether. So, you know. But I'm happy for you. I'm happy for Cincinnati. That's good.
Sam's going to Egyptian Premier League football after the.
Oh, I already follow that. That's longstanding.
I lie, baby.
You're gonna root for Saprissa. It's fine. You don't have to.
You mean Stanford?
Yeah, Stanford. Yeah. The fighting Jordan Morris's or the fighting Andrew Lux. But you know, one more thought on FC Cincinnati, and you know, I really hope too, and I don't want to send us down this rabbit hole because I know this could be a long, long discussion. But, you know, it's interesting to think about, you know, what good this rivalry could do for both clubs. And I understand that, you know, I think this is probably going to be one of the closer drives in Major League Soccer for, if not the closest drive, at least for a rivalry. And, you know, we saw what a great turnout we got in the Open Cup in June of last year, how there was an entire section of black and gold right next to the Bailey, and they were chanting and they were hooting and hollering, but it was all in good competition. It was all in good fun. But, you know, I love to think of the thought of a prospect of, you know, going down to Nippert and having that rivalry and then coming back up to Moffray or insert new stadium name here, you know, and having an entire stand and looking across the way and seeing blue and orange throughout the South stands and seeing, you know, them hooting and hollering. I mean, this could be something really special, and this could be something that, you know, Major League Soccer teams in the United States, just because of the travel schedule alone, don't get a chance to travel to, you know, many away matches. I know there are a lot of fans out there that went out to SKC this weekend and made that very long drive, but that is taxing. You know, now people can go down to Cincinnati, make a quick afternoon of it or a quick night, get back home and sleep in their own beds in the same day if they want to do that. And that's exciting to me. And I think that, you know, this will be something that this could be a game changer for Major League Soccer if Columbus Crew stay around and if FC Cincinnati and Columbus Crew have this tremendous rivalry like we all know they can.
I think it's interesting we had... Oh, go ahead, Sam.
Sorry, one quick thing. The location where FC Cincinnati is building a stadium, I've actually shot football games there for my alma mater the last 2 years. And it's going to be interesting to see how that stadium looks in that location, because it's going to be like right smack dab in the middle of a residential area. but it's within, you know, walking distance from a lot of really cool places in Cincinnati. So parking is going to be tricky, to say the least. So expect a lot of some sort of metro.
Which do we know how many spots they have?
Apparently, probably none. I bet they all have to shuttle in.
That wasn't the answer I was looking for.
Yeah, well, too bad. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that stadium will fit in that location. But hey, Metro Bus, you better get your act together and start a route to that stadium, I guess.
It was interesting just looking at some of Don Garber's comments, saying he thinks there's enough interest in soccer in the state of Ohio to support two teams. It's not like, you know, it'd be two teams in Cincinnati. You've of course got plenty of other teams, two LA teams, two New York teams. Obviously, those are bigger markets. But when you saw some of the comments about him, you know, praising the Cincinnati market, all you need to do is just kind of look at. I mean, the fact is, Cincinnati isn't growing. Certainly not at the rate that Columbus is growing. Columbus is the fastest growing city in the Midwest. One of the Franklin County, second fastest growing state or county in the state of Ohio, behind only nearby Delaware County, which we count as the Greater Columbus metro area. So when you look at the cities themselves and the demographics, 14 Fortune 500 companies, you know, the money in there, you've got a real educated workforce. If you were just putting the cities up next to each other and removing the names, I don't think there's a single chance that Don Garber picks Cincinnati over Columbus. So I thought it was also interesting, the comments that he made, and then, you know, made sure to walk back and qualify and talk about, oh, how they're trying so hard in Columbus and it's difficult in Columbus and they don't get the corporate support and they wish they got the level of corporate support that they got that they're getting in Cincinnati. But he put a lot of emphasis on the work of the local owners there in Cincinnati.
I'm sorry, the what, Bart?
Biggs? Oh, he said owner. He mentioned Anthony Precourt as well as an owner in an offhand comment, which is, you know, surprise, surprise, MLS can't get their ship together.
That's with a P. That's with a P, guys.
Exactly. Can't get on board, but it was interesting to see, you know, to see all of that. And of course, and then Don Garber said, well, it's, you know, we're happy to continue working with the Columbus partnership. But I thought it was interesting. Some of the observations that he made about Cincinnati, and then again, just sliding scale that he uses to rank and disparage Columbus as a market when otherwise if it weren't for and all credit to Linders and what they've done with FC Cincy and how they've been able to turn that team from a laughing stock by their own fans admission when that team was first announced to a team that now today is going to be getting an MLS franchise. But the difference there, again, it is the engaged local ownership, local owners who were going to the state to try to get support to help finance a stadium, that were willing, you know, to do the work and had the already entrenched relationships. Linders are part of, I mean, they are part of the Cincinnati aristocracy associated with the Reds and everything. So this, it's a completely opposite. It's what you're looking for in local owners, but it couldn't be farther away from what Anthony Precourt has done. It's the polar opposite from everything that he has done and everything that he represents as an owner or ownership entity or whatever the hell a PSV is.
From what I've heard, they're already considering moving FC Cincinnati to Sacramento, so there's that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the out clause for FC Cincy is.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's interesting. You talk about local owners that feel that they have stake in the development of local sports, pro team, whatever, even like their civic duty. To a certain degree, when Carl Linder bought the Cincinnati Reds from Marge Schott, there was a lot of reasons behind that, and we're not going to get into that. But you know, a lot of people saw him as the savior to the Reds. And man, I remember when he signed Ken Griffey Jr. to come play for the Reds. There was a lot of love for Carl Lindner, almost the same love as we gave Anthony Precourt when he bought the Columbus Crew from the Hunt Sports Group.
So hey, I heard.
Take
I heard
that
Mark
as
Schott,
it may be.
Sam, can you confirm that Marge Schott took Ambien?
Marge Schott, if she was on Ambien, if she took Ambien, she could have probably bought the whole company if that was the case. But the fact that they were able to get anything out of the city of Cincinnati, which has been scarred repeatedly by Paul Brown Stadium and by even by the Reds to a certain degree, but not nearly as much as by Mike Brown, is a testament to how the Linders really wanted to get this done. So the fact that it also cost them $150 million on top of everything is just chump change. But there's something, like you said, there's something to be said about local ownership. And I think the same thing happens in Austin in the case of, like, this is still an out-of-town owner. I don't think Anthony Precourt ever spent the effort nor the hustle, now that we're finding out, to actually make something happen in Columbus. This was always, I give him credit for being an excellent actor. He could probably take an Academy Award, maybe at least an Emmy, possibly a daytime Emmy, but, you know, depends on how you rank your Emmys. But he played his role very, very well in deceiving a lot of people and not actually putting in any effort on the inside. Not externally, it looks like he put a lot of effort, but on the inside, he didn't put any effort into actually finding a solution to a problem. And maybe it wasn't a solution, but, you know, finding a solution to his ambition issues. But, you know, ambition. We got to respect that.
So his ambition's not properly recognized.
Oh, no. By himself. He didn't even properly recognize his own ambition to actually work for it.
Wow. That's I don't know how to react to that. That's
too deep for this podcast.
That is very deep. That's for Massive Report central spiritual feeling time. I don't know. Wow, that was
that was terrible.
Well, we will just say to our friends and devoted listeners in Cincinnati and Kentucky and, you know, all that, congratulations.
Tri-state area. Don't forget
Southern
Indiana.
Of course, Southern Indiana. How could I forget? Congratulations, and look forward to hopefully another meeting this year in the U.S. Open Cup, another Hell is Real matchup, and many more Hell is Reals, confirming year after year that Hell is very much real. Up until perpetuity, and if not, well, you know, I don't think, again, anyone who believes that Columbus fans are going to just hop on the FC Cincy bandwagon if the Crew were to leave are sorely mistaken. And I think once the new hotness wears off in Cincinnati, if MLS continues, wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, Cincinnati run into some of the struggles that virtually every other MLS market has made. And then we'll see, you know, how much Don Garber values that decision at that time. But of course, all he cares about and all he's looking at is the $150 million that he's going to get in an expansion fee for any of them, for any expansion franchise. So it'll be interesting. Congratulations, FC Cincy. Let's keep Hell real. And let's move on to another upcoming game, an announcement that we've been waiting on with bated breath. We had some ideas it could be coming, some rumors. It wasn't sure who might it be. But today, finally, I got an email in my inbox from my season ticket holder confirming to me that's correct. Special match A is happening, and that will be what No, that's the international friendly. They couldn't even market it like Saprissa as like, by the way, here's the international friendly you're getting. I mean, that's how well it's all being marketed. But yep, Columbus, they will get their international friendly coming up on July 3rd, a day that nothing else is happening in the Columbus area, and probably something that are very on top of things and involved ownership and front office group were aware that there's nothing at all prominently scheduled, and that's why they scheduled it.
Yeah, this sucks. I mean, there's no dressing around it or jumping around it at all or anything like that. This friendly sucks. If you go around and you look at the last couple of opponents, let's look at who Crew SC welcomed to Mapfre Stadium. 2014, Crystal Palace, English Premier League squad. Awesome. La Liga side, Valencia, even better. That's, some would argue that's better competition than Crystal Palace. Kind of take a step back to Liga MX side, Veracruz. Okay, that's all right. You know, you can have an off year. And then you welcome in Eintracht Frankfurt last year, a Bundesliga club that finished mid-table. So that's not a terrible friendly necessarily either. And you go in with Costa Rican club Saprissa, who no casual fans will know who Saprissa is.
You mean the University of Stanford.
The University of Stanford. I joked with Sam when the announcement was first released and we saw the graphic that I thought they were facing the University of Stanford as the friendly. And, you know, judging by how things have gone this year, I really wouldn't be terribly surprised by that. But, you know, it's Saprissa. And Saprissa haven't won anything of real value since 2005. And sure, they're going to be Costa Rica's representation in the 2019 CONCACAF Champions League, but it's CONCACAF. Woohoo. But Saprissa, and what this indicates to me is that a couple of things, and I can be completely off the rails here, and that's fine. I'm sure you guys will put me right back on track. But it really kind of signifies to me that this was done, it has a very last-minute feel to it. And if we take a look at the track record for previous friendlies, I believe Eintracht Frankfurt was announced very early last season. I almost feel like it was a couple weeks after the season started. If you look at Valencia, Valencia was announced early May of 2015. This game's coming out darn close to about 4 weeks until it's supposed to happen, so it gives the fans little time to prepare. You have Red, White, and Boom on the same night, which is July 3rd, as Bart said. Nothing's going on in the city of Columbus. Traffic's not going to be terrible to get to downtown because, oh, and by the way, you're so far from the urban core of Mapfre Stadium. Mapfre Stadium's so far out from the urban core that the franchise is inviting people to stay and watch the city of Columbus fireworks from the stadium. And, oh, by the way, if you want to pay the convenience of having any kind of concession stands, they'll be open after the game if you want some.
Mmm, have some delicious, delicious rat. With your fireworks, a lot to enjoy.
Delicious. You know, this is, I go back to my term of bad at businessing, because, man, they are doing this so well. And I will be completely baffled if the city of Austin or anybody who cares about sports is not watching this going, we cannot go into business with these people. But yeah, What were they thinking on several different levels? But I know what they were thinking. They were not. They were thinking about Austin because they've wanted to have a team in Austin since, you know, the mid-90s. Before MLS existed.
During you know? His bachelor party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would have taken a friendly against the Ohio State University men's soccer team merely because Brian Mazenuf is their new head coach. And I would have been fine. Heck, I think more people would have actually attended this game than the number of people that will attend the Saprissa game. And market, well, not that we'd ever play Ohio State, but so many things I want to say, none of which are appropriate for our rating.
Well, and the thing is, it's like I've talked to several people that are well-connected in the situation today, and no offense, and I'm sure there are some people out there, but there's not a large Costa Rican contingent in Central mm-hmm. Ohio that are going to sit there and go, oh, Saprissa, I've got to stop and see that. Because let's take a look, and I know we're on two different playing fields here, but if you look at the International Champions Cup, you've got a great game happening in Ann Arbor that you're going to say, oh, Liverpool, Manchester United, you can't pull – I'm not saying that Crew SC would be able to get Liverpool, but – you know, you can't pull a high-class team down here and say, hey, maybe run your B or C squad against us and see how this goes. That way you could get name recognition and get people in the stadium. But this is sandbagging. This is sandbagging at its finest because Crew SC, I can guarantee you, we're not planning on having an international friendly because they thought, admittedly, that they had 1 foot in Austin and they were going to be shutting the door. But STC comes in and says, hold on, you're not closing that door necessarily. So they threw this together at the last minute. It's so poorly done. And I just shame on, you know, the front office for thinking that this was a great idea. And another thing, too, that I find really interesting is that, oh, by the way, your ticket for this match is sitting on your season ticket card. But for the Open Cup tickets, you've got to go ahead and reserve those because we don't have the capability of putting those on the season ticket card. That's embarrassing, and that's darn right horrible for fan experience. And the fact that these fans, the 11,000, 10,000, however many have been showing up at the game, you guys deserve a medal because you guys are the diehards that are sticking it out through this, and it's absolutely embarrassing. Anthony Precourt in the front office should be embarrassed for how they're treating fans. This is not right in any way, shape, or form.
Well, Anthony Precourt is hiding in a hole because he can't deal. Andy Lochnane is, apparently on his way to New Orleans. He's on his way to Austin via New Orleans and trying to be as incognito as possible. Mm-hmm. You know what? This would be so much better if the Crew just do what a good corporation... But do what a corporation would do and just buy back the tickets and put the money and refund the people the money, because this is downright embarrassing.
Well, and you know, compare, look at what who Columbus will be playing in the U.S. Open Cup next weekend. Chicago did. They've got Bayern Munich. Granted, Chicago, albeit organization run, maybe slightly better right now. Now that Dave Greeley's jumped over and is helping steer our boat into the rocks. But they picked up Bayern Munich for their international friendly, and then they made them reschedule an MLS league game so they could accommodate for that. Meanwhile, you've got here in Columbus all these, business geniuses, Sam, that are scheduling this game. If they had a single finger on the pulse, they would know that that's or just even gave a damn about fans. They don't do that, and they just, you know, say, look, if we're not going to produce you an international friendly that deserves it. I mean, this is a team that in 2011 had a friendly against the most decorated, one of the most decorated, objectively the greatest Premier League team of all time, Newcastle United. And today we're looking forward to having some delicious Saprissa ham on, you know, Red, White, and Boom.
And that was probably their last good international friendly. I mean, I remember that. That was fantastic.
Oh, that was awesome.
That was absolutely fantastic.
How
but you know what? Okay, and I want to be fair to
I like the
our
Valencia
friends.
Friendly, to be honest with you, but I'm
it was okay.
I
didn't
it.
Have the turnout from English fans that you did. For Newcastle.
Newcastle is a storied franchise. I mean, you're going to have a lot of folks that are going to get. It's got name recognition. A lot of folks out there. Go ahead. Sorry.
Let's be fair.
Or the West Ham game.
Let's be fair to our friends that work for the team, the employees, because don't blow up in their face because it is not their call. So no, I'm not. Yeah. And hey, when you call your ticket rep, it is not his fault or her fault that this shit is coming down. Continue to be nice to them. They probably have a worse time dealing with this than we are because this is their livelihood. Mm-hmm.
Anthony Precourt still has not addressed the team, these members of the front office yet either, according to reports from
what
I'm hearing.
So these people that work for the team outside of, you know, Precourt, Greeley, and Lochnane, be nice to them when you see them. It is not their fault that this crap is happening. Just a reminder so that everybody kind of stays on the up and up.
Absolutely. Well, we've kind of remained on that, but we've got we're running up against the clock here, so we want to get into the preview for the upcoming game. Not that that game won't, and there'll be plenty of time to vent in the days and weeks between about that friendly. Boy, what a letdown it was, though. But Columbus looking to remain, keep the clean sheets going this weekend against Toronto, coming back home. But if they're going to do it, as kind of alluded to earlier, they're going to have to do it without the spine of their team. With Zach Steffen out on international duty, he's going to be getting some time ostensibly in one of these upcoming friendlies for the U.S. team, whether that's against Ireland or France. Will Trapp also going to be on international duty. And then Jonathan Mensah, who may still be banged up. Then you look at, you're going to have Frederico Higuain out for this game and also have Christian Martinez out for this game. And suddenly, this is going to be a real test of that lauded crew depth that we've been talking about so much this season.
Well, I think it goes back to the point that we made earlier in the show, is that, you know, Berhalter is very intelligent tactically. He's not, you know, he's willing to adapt. I don't want to say stubborn, because that's not the best way to put it, but he's willing to adapt to this. And, you know, the interesting part about Toronto FC too is, you know, a couple of these guys, they're gonna, I believe, have a couple key absences as well for international call-ups as well. I have to check. I'm not sure if they flip-flopped, if Stefan's the one going in for Bono now or not, but I believe that's how it works. So they'll actually have their keeper back. But, you know, TFC's got a little bit of a Champions League hangover, which they've lost 3 of their last 4 matches and are sitting in 9th place in the Eastern Conference with 10 points and have a -6 goal differential. So, I mean, this is, you know, as Toronto's been hailed as being one of the deeper teams in Major League Soccer, and they seem to not be doing very well. So the interesting part about this is, you know, something's got to give here. I mean, you're going to get John Kempen in goal, presumably, for Crew SC. Ricardo Clark, I don't feel terrible about having replacing in for Will Trapp. We've seen what he can do. He's done a wonderful job there. Argudo has proven to be a tremendous surprise for Crew SC, the third rounder out of Wake Forest. And then, you know, Grelladinho is definitely doing some pretty awesome things for, you know, Crew SC. I think, what are the kids calling him? A Long Island Messi, mm-hmm. I think is the name of Mike Grella. But, you know, there's some good stuff there that, you know, I think is, it's promising for Columbus. I haven't seen a ton of tape on Toronto. I'm still kind of stuck in Champions League mode where, you know, I still have wonderful visions of Michael Bradley skied PK as I go to bed at night, which, you know, will forever and always make me smile and continues to make me happy even after going on a tirade about Anthony Precourt for the last 25 minutes. But, you know, it's exciting to see what Crew SC can do. I'm excited to see, you know, how Toronto come out, because they've got their backs against the wall, and will they be able to answer the bell, or will they get kind of knocked out by this black and gold defense?
It will certainly be a test for them, and obviously, and this is a good opportunity for Columbus for some of these young players, hopefully for this team to get back onto the goal scoring track, because we've seen a lot of, again, it's been such a razor thin margin. But you also look at and I want to kind of remain on this Toronto game too much, but, you know, with the, you're also looking at, it's a lot of games in a short amount of time coming up again for Columbus, because right after that Toronto game, you've got the following Wednesday, they're taking on Chicago, another MLS team, in the U.S. Open Cup. Then that's following Saturday, taking on New York Red Bulls, and then Atlanta the following Wednesday. So 4 games in a span of 13 days. We were talking about, you know, how much of a trouble it would be to do 3 within 8 days, and you're looking at basically two rounds of those, and again, in a team that's going to be shorthanded. So a big test coming up for Columbus, and I think that makes this game against Toronto, capturing 2-3 points against this team, that much more important.
Well, I mean, you would have played with some, you know, backups in the Wednesday game anyway. Mm-hmm. The problem is that you get to deploy everybody early. But, you know, you guys didn't even mention the likes of Nico Hansen.
Yep.
Or Eduardo Sosa, which I don't know what his status is and if he is fit or not. But you now have a really fairly decently stacked back line depending on Jonathan's injury, but you have Abubakar and you have Saro and you have Josh Williams and you have Harrison Offal and you have Valenzuela. So at least your back line and Abubakar. Did I mention Abubakar?
Mm-hmm.
So your back line is pretty decent. I am perfectly fine with Ricardo Clark being in the middle of the field with Artur. You might get to see Muhammad Abu for a little bit here and there, probably giving Ricardo Clark a spell of rest or whatever. But you know what? It's going to happen sooner or later, and it's better to figure out these things now when you're close to that midpoint of the season mark. Actually, we're not really close to that midpoint of the season. We're just past one third. But it's good to have that stuff, you know, figured out now. Yeah, it's a tough stretch. And we also kind of said the same thing about the other tough stretch that was 3 games in 8 days. So you're going to have a Chicago team, probably with Schweinsteiger this time, since he didn't travel the last time. You're going to have a New York team that's pretty hot, and an Atlanta team that's, well, a whole ton of money. So I think, I don't want to say they're going to be fine, but let's see, that's 12 points. They come out with anywhere between 6 and 10. That's probably going to be a successful stretch.
It'll certainly be. This is a Columbus needing to get off to a good start here. And again, so front loaded. Just, I believe after they get through this stretch, only going to have, I think, 7 more home games remaining in the season. Pretty wild stuff. We'll get some picks in after we quick give a shout out again to our great buddies at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, and www.oldnortharcade.com. We'll start off, Sam, with your pick here against Toronto.
Oof, man. I will go with a 1-0 Columbus Crew win.
Nice. 1-0 Columbus from Sam Fahmy. Ralph, what you got?
Tend to agree with Sam. I'm going to go with a 1-0 Crew SC victory.
1-0. Couple 1-0 victories for what it's worth. I'm going to go with 3-0. Another drubbing for Chicago here in Columbus.
Toronto.
Toronto, sorry. Yeah, same thing. We're going to drub them. It won't be another drubbing.
I mean, they both wear red, but you know.
Yeah, and they all, you know, suck. Especially you, Josie. I'm going to say Harrison Offal is finally going to get those goals. We're going to give him not one, but 2. That's right. 2 goals for Harrison Offal. And Josie Altidore is going to be held off the score sheet. Giassi Zardes putting one in the net to retake that lone top spot in the Golden Boot race and to keep Columbus entrenched at the top of the supporters' shield race. Any other parting thoughts from you, gentlemen?
From what I've been told, 2 things. FIFA 18's World Cup update for the video gamers out there is out, so get out there and have some fun.
Yes.
Do you have to pay for it?
Nope, free charge.
Oh,
free
update. They used to charge you separately for a World Cup game.
It's like the world. It's like the World Cup game, but they actually finally wised up and put it into FIFA 18. So
yeah, that makes way more sense now.
Can I play with the U.S.?
Yeah, you can. You can rewrite history.
Yep.
Oh, I can put myself in Bruce Arena's shoes. Wow.
Why would anybody want to do that?
Seriously.
And then
I just hate myself thinking about it.
2 local soccer news. Ladies of the Columbus Eagles will be playing Sunday night at Otterbein at 7 p.m. Should be a nice night out there. Columbus Futsal will be out there as well to support, from what I've been told. And then the 16th of June will be Save the Crew Night, from what I've heard, which is exciting. So if you are a member of STC and you want to come cheer up the lasses, I think that's what GCG Bag says. Save the Crew will be getting involved with the Eagles. So look forward to seeing everybody out there.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Well, that should do it for this week. We'll be back again next week. In the meantime, save the crew and bye, buddies.
Hey, buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast brought to you. Oh, just, well, it's live, but now you're counting down. What are we doing?
This okay, is gonna be hold a on, really stop, good, stop,
this
stop.
This is going to be a really good cold open.
Stop. We will probably put this in at the end. 3, 2,